A man named Jim stopped on the trail this morning, put his hand on a tree with bark, like deep canyon walls, and asked me how old I thought it was. I guessed wrong. Most of the big trees we walked under turned out to be only about 90 to 125 years old. But this same park, just in a different spot, holds trees more than 300 years old, older than this country. A former park ranger once counted 320 growth rings on a giant that had fallen across the trail. Jim counted 250 on another, and all of it had been standing in a forest 15 minutes from my house the whole time, while I drove past it for 33 years and never once stopped to count. I'm Krishnan Iyer, and this is the Mosaic Mind, where I follow curiosity wherever it leads. The forest is Bridle Trail State Park between Bellevue and Kirkland, and the first thing I learned today is that it almost did not survive. About 25 years ago, the state was short on money, and the entire annual cost of running this park was around $60,000. $60,000. For that, they were ready to close it. So, the neighbors did something I keep turning over in my head. They drove down to Olympia, they testified, and when that did not work, they came home and built a foundation, the Bridle Trails Park Foundation. They signed a 40-year agreement to pay half the park's operating cost themselves. They paid for the trail signs. They provided most of the funding for a senior park aide to assist the ranger who recently helped clear the 200 trees that came down across the trails in a single windstorm. And now they are emptying their bank account to build a tiny education classroom, 1,100 square feet, because this park has never once had an indoor room to teach a child in. Our guide, Jim, is a retired biologist who volunteers there. And Jim is, in his own words, a nerd, the good kind. He counted 250 growth rings on one fallen tree. He tracked down handwritten logging records from 1898. He found an aerial photo from 1936, the last year anyone cut timber here, and used it to build an age map of the whole forest. He does this for no reason except that he wants to know. And standing next to a person like that, watching them light up over a tree stump, is its own kind of education. Here is the thing he taught me that I cannot stop thinking about. Look at the three big trees of this forest: Douglas fir, western hemlock, western red cedar. The Douglas fir has no branches down low. They are all way up at the top. And that is not damage. That is a decision. A Douglas fir drops its lower branches the moment a branch costs more energy than it earns. They call it the compensation point. When a limb stops paying its way, the tree lets it go. But the cedar and the hemlock keep their branches all the way to the ground because they evolved to make a living in the shade, where every scrap of light is worth keeping. Same forest, same sunlight, two completely different strategies for what to hold on to and what to release. And then there is the lichen. You've seen it, that pale gray-green stuff on every trunk and rock. I always assumed it was one plant. It is not. It is at least two creatures living as one. A fungus that can actually digest rock, and an algae that can turn sunlight into food. The fungus holds on and breaks down the stone. The algae feeds them both. Neither one can survive alone anymore. Jim called it an obligate partnership. They evolved past the point of independence. Somewhere back in time, two separate organisms basically said, "We could make a better living together." And they were right. Most of the lichen you see here is not on the rocks at all. It is living right on the trees. I think that is the moment the whole walk turned for me. Because we had started with a budget fight and money and permits. And here was the forest quietly demonstrating the opposite lesson. That the strong thing, the lasting thing, is rarely the thing standing alone. There was one more reframe. I always pictured an old growth forest as a finished cathedral. Still, permanent. Jim said no. Old growth is not a static climax. It is constant turnover. Trees die from wind and root rot and beetles. They fall. They become logs on the floor that feed the next generation. The openings they leave let light down to the seedlings that have been waiting underneath for decades. The death is not the failure of the forest. The death is what makes it diverse, what makes it alive. And much of this forest is young, really. Most of it was logged and grew back in about 90 to 125 years, which means almost everything towering over me today returned inside a single human lifetime. Because at some point, people simply stopped cutting and let it come back. Toward the end, we were all reaching for the salmon berries. And Natasha, one of the foragers, taught me something I had never heard. When you forage, she said, you ask the plant for permission, and then you give something back. Share what you know. Sing it a song. Help it spread its seeds. Pick up the trash around it. She called it reciprocity. Honoring the plant by giving as much as you take. She even had a gentle test for a berry. If you tug it and it does not come away easily, it is not ready, not to leave the plant and not for you. And everyone's hands kind of slowed down. So here is what I'm taking with me. Three things, really, that a community can refuse to lose something and win over $60,000 and a lot of stubbornness. That the trees around us are running strategies far older and wiser than ours about what to hold and what to let fall. And that the most resilient things in that forest, the lichen, the old growth, the park itself, are all partnerships. Nothing made it alone. This week, find the oldest tree on your own street. Put your hand on the bark. Try to guess its age. You will probably guess wrong, like I did. And that is the whole point. I'm Krishnan Iyer. Thanks for listening to The Mosaic Mind. If this episode made you think, share it with someone who'd appreciate it. See you next time.